Chapter 13. Rain drumming on the porch woke me. For an instant, I wondered why I was on the love seat instead of upstairs in my bed. Then memory flooded back, and with it, a sense of bewilderment. Had someone really tried to break in, or was the whole early morning episode just another nightmare? My mind felt foggy, and my eyes felt hot. I stood up from the love seat, stretched, and automatically went about the motions of feeding and watering my two animals, while my thoughts whirled around that dark figure on the porch. It seemed so much like a bad dream that I began to doubt whether it had happened until I saw the empty coffee cup and the aspirin bottle on the table where I had left them, visible proof that the intruder on my porch had been real. Soon the aroma of fresh brewed coffee filled the kitchen. I sat down at the table with my cup of hot caffeine and tried to make sense of the last few days. Should I tell Cade about the person on the porch this morning? If there had been any clues as to his identity, the rain would surely have washed them away. But I couldn't rest until I checked it out myself. I shrugged into a light jacket, grabbed a flashlight, and took Ulysses with me onto the porch. The morning sky was dark under low clouds. Rain beat against the roof and dripped off the eaves. I shone the light on the porch where the stranger had stood. My heart thudded. Several fresh scars in the paint showed where he had tried to remove the screen. The windows in this old house were long ones, reaching nearly from floor to ceiling. If he had gotten the screen off, he would have had no trouble in slipping a crowbar under the sash and prying it open. What if I hadn't come downstairs for the milk and aspirin? What if I hadn't had Ulysses with me? Shining the beam around the porch, I saw nothing at all that did not belong there. Nothing except... I knelt down and examined a small object sticking up from between the boards. It was a flat piece of black metal rimmed with gold. A hole in one end identified it as part of a key ring. Gingerly holding it by the edges, between my thumb and forefinger, I shone the flashlight's beam onto it. A tiny gold replica of a large house was emblazoned in the center. Under it were two letters, CF. The house looked familiar. Could it be the Carver farm? That would account for the initials. Was this morning's culprit a member of the Carver family, or possibly someone who worked there? Was the key ring exclusive to the estate, or were they for sale somewhere? Calling to Ulysses to follow, I went back into the house. Placing the key ring on the table, I stood staring at it. What a puzzle! And what did I have to do with any of the events of the last few days? Why would someone from the farm want to break into my house? What did I have that anyone could possibly want? I shuddered at a vile thought. Did he just want to silence me? I was, after all, the person in whom Miss Evangeline had confided. That was my only connection, Evangeline and her request. I didn't have the paper she had given me any longer. Ron had it. But I knew her wishes. Was Ken Riley the one who tried to break in? He knew I was suspicious and had made the trip to the place where she died, looking for any clues pertaining to her death. But why would Ken care? He had wanted to know what Miss Evangeline and I discussed, but I hadn't told him. Was the intruder Mo Decker out for revenge? To his twisted way of thinking, it was my fault that he had been sent to jail. After showering, I slipped into blue jeans and a red sweatshirt, ran a comb through my curls, pulled on some socks, and stepped into my brown loafers. Maybe today I could find some answers to the Carver puzzle. As I sat at the table with my third cup of coffee, Penny purring on my lap, Ulysses under the table, and the rain falling steadily against the windows, my eyes grew heavy and my head drooped. I needed to think about Miss Evangeline's death and Lila Mae Fletcher driving into a flooded bridge crossing. But my lack of sleep was catching up with me, and my thoughts were definitely muddled. My mind needed to be sharp. I had to think through this puzzle, but my body was demanding that I crawl into bed, pull the covers over my head, and forget about violence and mysteries. We humans are a paradox. Talking aloud sometimes helps me sort things out, so I now addressed Penny. "I need more information," I told her. "Kate isn't telling me anything about Lila Fletcher's death. I wonder if there's something about Miss Evangeline he's keeping to himself. And who besides Cade could give me some answers?" A sneeze interrupted my pondering. "I sure hope I don't have a cold coming on," I said as Ulysses nudged my knee. "Yes, I know you need a chewy bone or a treat. You've been a good boy, and I don't blame you for not going out in this downpour. I wouldn't want you to catch a cold either." I snapped my fingers as a thought occurred to me. "What a good idea! Thanks, Ulysses." I would go to see Dr. Gormley. After all, maybe this sneeze meant I was catching a cold, or worse. Probably not, but a person couldn't be too careful. My aching head was not a figment of my imagination, and although I was pretty sure it was due to lack of sleep, it could be a symptom of the onset of a really bad malady. In either event, it was a good excuse to go see my doctor. I remembered Don Gormley from grade school, a small, skinny boy with a shock of black curls and serious brown eyes. He had grown into a tall, skinny man. He still had a head full of curls, although they were more gray than black now, and serious brown eyes. He sometimes came to services at Rose Chapel, probably when his uncertain doctor's schedule allowed it. The years had sat lightly on Don Gormley, but the really neat thing about him was that, as well as having a private practice, he was our county medical examiner. Surely he had to sign the death certificates for Miss Evangeline and Lila. I wondered what he knew about these two women that I didn't know. And if he knew, would he tell me? Only one way to find out. I picked up the phone. Don Gormley hung his stethoscope around his neck and nodded at me as I perched on the edge of his examining table. "Ned, I'd say you are as healthy as a horse. Just get plenty of rest and drink lots of liquids." "Thanks, Don," I said, sliding from the table and shrugging into my jacket. "You probably have a lot of people coming in with colds due to this changeable weather." He nodded. "A few more than usual." Sometimes a straightforward approach is the best approach. "I understand you are a county medical examiner. With Miss Evangeline's death and that drowning last night, it's a wonder you aren't down with a cold, too. Probably not getting enough rest, are you?" He looked puzzled for a moment. "What drowning?" "Oh, you mean Miss Fletcher. Business has picked up, I'm afraid. You're free to go, Ned. I'd love for you to stay so we could chat, but I've got another patient who can hardly wait to come in here and get a flu shot." So Dr. Gormley, the serious young man, was now a serious physician who wasn't about to abuse doctor-patient privilege, even if the patient was dead. I'd have to wait for Cade to tell me what I wanted to know, which meant I'd probably wait a long time. One important thing was that Don had at first seemed puzzled when I called Lila a drowning victim. Did that mean she didn't drown, or was Dr. Gormley simply absent-minded? Don Gormley's receptionist wasn't any more talkative than he, but a woman in the waiting room was. "Thanks, Mrs. McNeil," the receptionist said as she handed me a receipt for the money I'd given her. "You're welcome, Louise. The rain looks like it'll keep on all day. I hope we don't have any more flooding," I said as I turned to leave. "Right. We don't need another drowning like that poor Lila Fletcher. Isn't it awful? First Miss Carver's death and then her poor housekeeper." Dr. Gormley's prospective patient, a woman in a purple sweater and tight purple pants, said, shaking her head. "Terrible," I agreed. "Such a pity about Miss Carver. My son's friend is an ambulance attendant. He said if Miss Carver had gotten help sooner, she might be alive today." I stopped on my way to the door. "Do you mean she wasn't killed instantly?" I asked. The woman shook her head. "Nope, not according to the attendant." I thought about this as I dashed through the rain to my car. I thought about it all the way home. So Miss Evangeline hadn't died when her head hit the rock? How long did she remain unconscious? And then a disturbing idea occurred to me. Was she dead when Ken found her? Surely she was, or he would have tried to get help for her. As I drove under my carport and ran into the kitchen, I rehearsed what little I had learned before Dr. Gormley clammed up. The only thing, actually, was that he was puzzled for a moment when I called Lila a drowning victim. So if she didn't drown, how did she die? Then there was the woman in the waiting room. Was she right about Miss Carver being unconscious but alive for a long while before she died? Of course, Don Gormley knew approximately how long Miss Evangeline had been dead when she was found. Medical examiners determined this as part of their job, didn't they? At least, that's what they did on those forensic shows on television. This was extremely confusing. I really needed to talk to Cade.